The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive-compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid, we know what you are and what you want. Stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you're depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you're dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk.
Hey, everybody. This is John Namath, and you're listening to the man, the myth, and the legend, Frank Cardillo on Cardillo Chronicles.
Months in deep space. By our time, that is. According to Dr. Haslein's theory of time in a vehicle traveling nearly the speed of light, the Earth has aged nearly 700 years since we left it. Well, we've aged hardly at all. Maybe soon. This much is probably true. The men who sent us on this journey are long since dead and gone. You who are reading me now are a different breed. I hope a better one. I leave the 20th century with no regrets, but one more thing, if anybody's listening, that is. Nothing scientific, it's purely personal. But seen from out here, everything seems different. Time bends, space is boundless. It squashes a man's ego. I feel lonely. That's about it. Tell me, though, does man, that marvel of the universe, that glorious paradox who sent me to the stars, still make war against his brother? Keep his neighbor's children starving?
That's some control over there, you know what I mean?
Thank you. Bard comes here whenever the Bard wants to come here. The Bard of the web, of the Bard of broadcasting, I mean. I'm here. I'm the godfather of internet radio, and I'm here when I want to be here. I'm here when I have to be here. I don't ever have to be here, but if I'm here with you, that's the best time to be here. My name is Frank Atolo. Man, his name joins the title of the show. It will persist minute by minute, so stay with us. And a bunch of good stuff. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. They don't call them bordellos anymore. Is that a Spanish word? I think so. My name is Frank Atolo. My name is Don Donjo. And here we are again. Every once in a while, you hear something and you go, that's him, but what is he talking about? Because a rerun goes on if you're listening on the live stream. And, you know, there's reruns all over the place. This thing we call Cthulhu Chronicles, which has been now for many decades, more than one is many, I'd say. It shows up in the weirdest of places. I mean, there are still people who've never heard it or of it, and they go wonder what's going on with that, because it still sounds fresh and it still sounds original and it still sounds like I'm pumping it. And I'm not anymore. Not anymore. I remain the Bard of broadcasting, the godfather of internet radio. Bard of the internet, the difficult historian, and everything else. All the other titles that I have accumulated through the years. So wake up, it's night. It's closer to night than ever. When we started that phrase, what was that? Was that 10 years ago? Oy, oy, oy. I was sitting here, I'm not going to get melancholy or morbid for that matter. But what happened, let me tell you what's going to happen, because that's what's more important than what happened, because what happened is past tense and that's over. Let me tell you what's going to happen, because there are some things going to happen on this show through the months that lead us to when it's really hot down here. And we're all ready to just punch each other in the face, even if it's, I'm the only one here. I don't know. Maybe I should get a summer replacement. I don't know. Look, here's what's going to happen. As far as we can tell, and all things being equal, here's what's going to happen. Next week, old friend of ours, Dusty Nathan, the Dust Man, DN, the DN man, and all those things you could say about him. Dusty Nathan, a man who I edited. I didn't edit him. I edited his work many times, and I've worked with him as a journalist here and there. And he has worked as a journalist here and there, and he's studied things, and he's had his own radio show. I was on his radio show way long time ago. And he had a radio show on the antenna radio, on the wooden brick and mortar land. Every once in a while, Dusty would come by here, and he started coming by here with a purpose. Dusty has to have a purpose. He goes, I ain't just going to come on and talk about anything. He's got a purpose. He's a purpose-driven man. He used to come the Thursday that we broadcasted before the Kentucky Derby. And what's interesting about this, if it's interesting at all, because Dusty and I both have a history in and still do have. I mean, you can't have a history if you still. Anyway, what we do is we talk about what they call the world's greatest 2 minutes in sports. And that, because, you know, people who don't even like horse racing, of course, watch the Kentucky Derby on Saturday. It's a big thing, the first Saturday in May. Dusty will be here. He originally came on this show as a guest, And we talked about the upcoming, which would be Saturday. We're on live Thursday, the live stream. And then Saturday, you know, I'm starting to sound more like Ari Melber. What is that? I don't know. And that's who I'm hearing in my head. You're probably going, so what are you talking about? It's Frank Atola, man's name who don't just title the show. It's not Ari Melbert. I made up that name anyway. Dusty comes on. We talk about the upcoming race because a lot of people like to watch it. A lot of people like to gamble. It is legal. Or they gamble among themselves, which I guess is legal. Nobody stop. The police don't raid a house, I guess. But anyway, whatever the case may be. So that's going to be next Thursday. If you're listening on the live stream. Now, what's also interesting about that is if you listen to the show on the rebound, if you listen to it on any of the stations that broadcast this show or rebroadcast it, or you listen to the Juiced Talk Archive show, the Kentucky Derby's already happened. So you get to hear things like, wow, was he stupid? Or wow, that was smart. Or geez, I'm sorry I listened. Or I'm sorry I paid attention. Or whatever. And so it's one of the rare times that happens because in general, we are generic. We are not topical per se. And we're not like those stupid shows. That's editorial, but I can do that because this is my show. And the name, right, adorns the title, right? Okay. Dusty Nathan will be here for our Kentucky Derby show. We haven't done one. I don't know what happened. Many things happened because many things continue to happen in all lives everywhere. And then suddenly Dusty wasn't coming by and we weren't doing the show, the Kentucky Derby show the Thursday before the Saturday, which is the first Saturday in May. I don't know why. It just happened as things happen. That will happen. And he will be here, and maybe even Ray Cotolo, who of course also still does work greatly, greatly munificent worker in the paramutual horse racing business and a darn good stand-up comedian and a Twitterer. Dusty's not on Twitter, but you know, at Ray Cotolo or at, what is he now? Raymond I. Israel, Raymond J. Israel. I don't know, whatever. You can get him on Twitter. He's got a lot of fun stuff going on there. Now, also what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, I don't have exact dates for this. The artist D and I have exchanged communications for various reasons. So here's the first reason. The first reason is that my newest rocket science column is appearing on forculture.com. Under the category words, forculture.com, rocket science. It's my column. I stopped doing those wonderful stories because I had other commitments, which we'll talk about one of these days. And they still wanted me on there because I apparently draw a readership. Excuse me. That's a banana that's doing that to my. So what? Oh, so we were communicating and I said to D, you know, you should be on again, not necessarily on because of, you know, the end of the year with the Bone Garden or any other particular topic, but what we could find should be on again because since I left the Tuesday night Forethought roundtable there on YouTube, that's live and you can get it at YouTube. God, there's so much to, everybody's everywhere, you know? Oh my goodness. Anyway, since I left, I haven't talked a lot to Dean, so we'll have some fun on here talking about things, because Dee said, you know, there's a bunch of things I hear when, that you talked about, that I have comments about, and well, let's hear your comments about them then, okay? So come on the show when you can. I know it's difficult because there's time differences, but you know. I say that along the line, if Kirk Brando could be on, and he will be on again, and he's never in this time zone. Where is he? Saudi Arabia, Hong Kong, Mumbai, what a name, Mumbai, and any other place where he happens to be located. We can make it with him, and we can make it with the time difference for the artist. So that'll be happening. Check these off as I go along, should I? I actually have them written down. Is that something here? Because I don't want to, I don't wait. I gotta get my chopstick. I use it as a back scratcher. I don't eat with it anymore. It's just sitting here. But it's a good thing. Because, you know, sometimes back scratchers have, well, they do. They have these claws on the end. And you can really hurt yourself. I know I can. I know I have. I know I will again. So I'll check this one off there. Now, also, I was talking to Tom Savino, who, if you listen on the live stream here on Thursday nights, follows me with his show, Savino Veritas. Tom unearthed more old, they're practically antique, old radio shows. And I mean old radio shows. He and I wrote, and I produced in terms of, well, anyway, more shows and pieces of the shows and all sorts of stuff, which are going to be on, I think if you go to Juice Talk, you know, you can listen to those old Dead Air half hours. And there's new one and some other new things are coming up from the past when Tom Savino and Frank Cotolo were a team in that order. It's Tom Savino and Frank Cotolo here on Dead Air and various other escapades that we did on radio. And if you listen to it and you go, geez, that, you know, it sounds like this, that, and the other thing. Just remember, this stuff was done, recorded, written, and performed before a lot of that other things. So we're really out of, you know, that's a time warp going on. Dead Air and many of the other things from our production company suffered from the curse of being ahead of its time. So for you people out there, and this is why you should read my, you really should go and read, even if you're not a comedian, my rocket science column, the new one. It's called Not Everyone is Capable of Splitting the Atom. Don't be scared. My titles are always poetic. So what was I saying? Oh, so Tom Savino. Anyway, and if you're listening live on this stream, of course he will be on after this show. And those of you carrying this show and when it's not live, but lifelike, so you have a recording of it, then please download also at Juice Talk, the Tom Savino, Savino Veritas, and play it as much as you want. It's a good show to follow mine. Satire, terrific. The man doesn't need me to be humorous. I needed him to be humorous. But in any event, in all event, and certainly in this event, he will be back on this show. So I'm giving you the scoop on the classic old tapes. And they were tapes of recordings on tape, which Tom masterfully. It sounds like it should be masterly. Masterfully. Produced, reproduced, digitalized, and now they are forever. Because I don't know anybody who's figured out how to wear down a digital file, have you? I don't know. They get corrupt now and then, but on their own device, by their own device. No one knows how. But you could make copies of them. They're all the same quality. Not so in the old days. And I mean old days. Anyway, go listen. See if you can find, hey, that's Tom. Isn't that Frank? Isn't that Tom? Isn't that Frank? You know, whatever. He will be on when we do another Three Amigos show. Once in a while, three guys who went to the same college and took the same course, communication arts, Tom Savino, Tom Martin, and me, Frank Cotolo. Tom Martin, you might remember, he's been on this show in the past on his own. He was instrumental in the original cable TV boom. So he's got lots of past stories and things. And when the three of us get together, it's a hoot. I guess hoot is a good word for it. The three amigos. Tres amigos. Is it amigos de tres? No, tres amigos. The adjective goes after. Amigos del tres. Wait, uno, dos, tres. Yeah, amigos de tres. There you go. Now, I want to tell all of you what is going on tonight in reference to what you can do to really enhance this show for many people who have not been with this show forever and ever. Amen. And that is this. Send me, here, first of all, write this down. I'm writing it down and I know it. I'm just doing that. That's just a motor reaction. Motor reaction? No, fcatolo@yahoo.com. fcatolo@yahoo.com. Here's what you can do. I always give that out because you could write to me about anything you want. I don't care. I will respond to everyone. Ask anybody who's written in. I respond to everyone. Okay? Okay. Write in what you'd like to hear that you never heard. And a lot of the shows we've done are by word of mouth. It gets around that I've done this and I've done that because this is the original internet radio talk show. Okay. And before it was on here, SRN and all these other stations, it's also the first syndicated talk show. So yeah, and there was a time we were on like three stations live at once. That got really hairy because the equipment was not equipped to be able to hold all those servers, but that's history. Point being that we've done so many shows in two decades and so many good ones. People go like, geez, I wish I would have heard that one. Someone told me about the show with Joe Federico. He wasn't here, but I told the story. I said, man, sure wish I would have heard that. Meanwhile, I'm still looking for that particular one. But there are many shows, including some stuff I'm going to play for you tonight that was requested for a reason I will tell you shortly. But first, you got the email address and you get a topic. We might have talked about it. To say, like, did you ever talk about Siberian tigers? Yes, we did on a show when we did a show. So I'll go yes and I'll look for that show and we will play pieces of the shows inside of the live show as I'm going to do tonight for a specific reason. Now, and one of them is a request, but, stay with me here. Stay with me. Follow me down the path, down the rabbit hole. If you go to CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com, that's the official blog and webpage that we've had from the beginning. Well, not from the beginning, because in the beginning they didn't even have Blogger. Maromame! Right? They didn't. So what you do is you go to that website. Now on the left, you'll see dates. 2000, I think, I don't know where it starts. 2004, 5, 6, I don't know. It starts somewhere in the 2000s. Even though the show was on the air earlier than that. But the software and the equipment and the power wasn't there to do a lot of the recording. So a lot of those shows just went by the wayside. And they should too, because it was a whole different show and whatever. It was still me talking, but things were different. Because things change. But if you travel down, which travel, by travel, I mean scroll, that's the word you use. If you scroll down that list of years, stop at one, click it. And wait, it's years and then dates, dates. Like September of 2008. Right. Then you'll go, it'll take you to the page, which still exists there, of course. Nothing leaves the internet. The page there that has all the blurbs about what we did on the shows, the show of that week or 2 weeks if it's a 2 week page. So you go like, oh, dude, look, there's a show where this guy, oh, look who was on this show. It was the guy who helped write The Lion Sleeps Tonight. We've had guest stars and things and whatever. Yes. I said, oh, geez, look at that. Well, I'd like to hear that, even though it's somewhat dated. Why not? We've had so many good guests, and I'm not saying you need to find a show that has a guest. What I'm saying is you're going to see that we did so much. We have performed so much, and we have had so many great guests you might have missed. At this age of the show, I started feeling like, oh, geez. You know, if I talk about these things, it'll never be the same as when I talked about them on the original shows. Cause I don't, this is not scripted. I mean, I'm sure I'll make a couple of notes, but there's nothing scripted here. So what's going to happen is, why talk about these things, you know? It'll never be the same. So, and there was something very special, I have been told, about those shows, and they were one-time deals. Well, now if we have them in our personal archive, because we have so many gigabytes available now, then what happens? You know what happens? We can play it. And I will do it as I'm going to do tonight. This is a good lead-in, introduction to what I'm going to do and why I'm going to do it. So do that, or just think about a topic. Because we've covered so many topics. Think about someone, oh, geez, did you ever have this person on as a guest? Whatever, I don't know. Let's just do it. And I'll get the nearest thing to whatever it is you were talking about, if it's a theme, and I'll get the exact show. And I'm not going to edit the show or anything. I'm just going to cue it up to a certain point. You know, so you'll hear some stuff from the past. That's okay, here and there, because, you know, what am I going to do? I'm not going to sit and re-edit these shows. I didn't edit them in the first place. I mean, I'm re-edit. I'm not going to edit them. I'm just going to play them as I will tonight. Now, what about tonight? Well, let me tell you what about tonight. I was, someone was talking to me about Planet of the Apes, because there is a new series, which is a movie, Hollywood movie, CGI filled stuff. They took Planet of the Apes, rebooted it. I don't know. Yeah, I guess they just did it, right. I don't know if the series they're doing now was connected to the Mark Wahlberg, Tim Burton thing. Anyway, the point is, there's, you know, we got war, the most recent one, War of the Planet of the Apes. I was talking to somebody considerably younger than myself who said, talking about the Planet of the Apes, I said, have you ever seen the original Planet of the Apes? And they went, wasn't there one with that guy with Moses? Yeah, Moses, Charlton Heston. I think it's 1968. The movie was Planet of the Apes. This is the original one. I think it was based upon a book. I didn't look that up. I'm sure there was a book, not just a story, Planet of the Apes. I think it was a book. But that movie was at the time was, and I was telling this person, I said, you know, at the time that Planet of the Apes came out, the original Planet of the Apes came out, and there was a series, the Planet of the Apes, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, Return of the Planet of the Apes, Planet of the Apes Go to Harlem, or, you know, whatever. There were all these things, the movies that went on, but the original Planet of the Apes was kind of revolutionary in its time, especially for its makeup. Cause these guys and gals were all in this suit and makeups that nobody had seen the sheer volume of all the apes and the different characteristics of the apes. And a team of makeup people put that together. And it was so impressed Hollywood itself that the makeup team won Academy Award, an Oscar, which is an Academy Award for it. I guess in 1968. It's weird. You know, sometimes a movie comes out and they give it a date and then, you know, when they got the Oscar in the next year or early in the year, whatever. Doesn't matter. Let's not be particular about those details. Okay. In that group, who were makeup artists who created the new style of makeup and did all the makeup for, did, created and applied and all the makeup for all the people who were apes in Planet, the original Planet of the Apes, they received an Academy Award. They got an Oscar. The only Oscar that the movie won was for makeup. In June, to be specific, June 14th, 2007. So I'm talking to this person. I'm saying, do you know that one of the team of makeup people who invented and did the makeup that won the Oscar, an Oscar winner was on the show. He wasn't the first Oscar winner, But a man named Maurice Stein, I said he was on my show some years ago. Boy, that's some years ago. This is 11 years ago. I didn't even know at the time I was talking to this young person. They went, really? You mean, and they said that, you mean they had internet radio 11 years ago? Yeah, right. And before phones, I may add, but let's not go into this generation thing. Well, doing is this. I said, yes, Maurice Stein. I said, and if you'd like to hear it, let me know. And you'll hear the guy talk about how they did it and blah, 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 and all other stuff. Because makeup is, you know, kids. I say kids because they're kids. When I was a kid, I didn't say kid, but they're kids. You know, kids, millennials and what have you. They're into all sorts of things. And a lot of them are into cosplay and makeup. And they, you know, they go to the Comic-Con and they dress up, or they go to, well, they do a lot more of that than ever done. So they know. So I said, yeah. I said, why don't you and your friends, if I could find the show, you and your friends, I will broadcast the original interview, which lasted, let's see, 30 to 140. It lasted, I don't know, it's almost an hour. Okay? And I'll put it on one of the shows. Okay, so the week goes by, and I find it. I found the show. Exactly the way I told you to find the show, because I don't have tags and little titles on these files. It just has the date. So if you said to me, hey, when Van Dyke Parks was on, I'm sorry, I don't know what year or date that might have been. I have to do what I ask you to do if you want to find out. Go to the blog. And hope that it goes back far enough to, well, I think it goes back, I think it goes back further than we actually have files of these shows. But in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, what I'm saying to you is I found it and I wrote it down and I wrote down, you could see it right here. Excuse me. It's the banana. A banana is making me hiccup. Banana and coffee. Long story. No, it's not a long story. Banana and coffee. What's so, not a long story. I wrote down, I went to, the spot in the file where it starts and it, to where it ends, whatever, with Mr. Maurice Stein. Okay. So then last week came about and, circumstances beyond my control, which continue to be either technical or personal or career-wise. Those are the three things that stopped this show from broadcasting at any given time. And this year has been just the worst year of all of them in terms of technical, personal, and what was the third one? Hello. What was the third one? Career. Because things are happening in my life that get in the way of devoting this amount of time on Thursday nights. All right. Once in a while, a rerun is on. And that's why. Because it's either personal. It's technical at this end, not at the server end from Canada or through Great Britain and whatever. Okay. So, okay. Hold on. I know where I'm at in the conversation, which is not a conversation. It's a monologue because you're not talking. So I write it down, I put it, I fold the paper, I put it, I go, all right, I'm going to do that. And then something happened, which is, you know, none of your BI business yet. Yet? It'll never be any of your business. My point is one of those three things stopped the show that should have been on April, whatever that was, 19th or last week somehow, if you're listening live. If you're not listening live, that's still the date. Those are still the dates. Okay. And the show did not air. Okay, so what is so amazing about all this? You just pushed it back? No. No. This week rolled around, told my friend, listen, I'm going to run this Maurice Stein Oscar winner, the original Planet of the Apes, on the 26th. So what did I do? I went and like say, you know, I wonder about Mr. Stein. And I go to IMDb, Internet Movie, that's not it. It's, what is it? The Internet Movie Database. IMDb. No, IDBM, International Data Movie Base. IMDb. You know what I'm talking about. I looked up Maurice Stein, and son of a gun, his picture, his photograph is gone. Maybe it was never there. I don't know. Because I never looked him up at IDBM or IMDb or DMBI or whatever. But it turns out that he recently died. He died this year, recently, in February, which is not that long ago, from when this show is being recorded live and broadcast live. And I went, isn't that something? Of all the shows, of all the things that could have come up, that came up. It was him, and that's how I learned that he passed away. I think it's a good thing to dedicate this particular portion of one of the shows to him. Too many people die and are forgotten, especially people who are sideline supporters of a greater industry, of an industry where other people shine more than the people who assist them. You know what I'm talking about. The people who move the cables and move, I don't know, maybe you've never been on a movie set, but the people who move the cable, the electricians, the carpenters, the, not the singing carpenters either, the carpenters, the script girls and the people and the typists and the people who serve the food every, and the makeup, you know, the crew. I mean, you know, everybody leaves when the credits are at the end and there's all, you see it scroll. There's like so many people involved. It's such a community effort. It is such a it's a massive affair of coordination, talent, and community. One movie, okay? Those people, of course, come and go, and blah, 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 okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this, let's see, 30, how long is it? It's got to be, let's see, 30? I don't know, I can do the math. I'm going to play it until it's over. Mr. Maurice Stein, or Maurice Stein, you'll hear that in the intro. I listened to a little bit in the beginning. And you're going to hear him talking, and he was an Oscar winner. It's a request, and this is the kind of thing I'm going to do. And I've been doing this already, by the way, a couple of weeks I've done it. We ran some great stuff that we did, and I'm going to keep looking for stuff, and I'm going to keep going to my email to find out what you people want to hear so we can add that to it. And in that mix will also be regular shows where I just talk, as they call them, drum solo shows, and shows with guests, as I mentioned to you, when Dusty Nathan returns, and some other people who have not been on for a while who I promised to get back on. You know, but this has become something a show I have to juggle with many other, things I'm devoted to, and career stuff that happens to take up a lot of my time and energy. I'm not as old, I'm not as young as I was when we started this show. What show? Cotolo Chronicles. And I'm Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. So be that as it may, I wonder how this show began. It's June 14th, 2007. I'll keep my mic live. Listen.
Got your two. Got your one.
This is how it started.
You're on. Any portion of this program may be duplicated and freely distributed throughout the world. World. Provide my own echo there. World. Permission is granted. To share all data electronically over the internet or by mechanical means. Feel free to enjoy and to think freely as you do, although this program will have no tangible effect on everyday life on Earth.
That's how I started.
And that in itself is debatable. Its implications for science, philosophy, and even religion are profound. And tonight, the implications for science, philosophy, religion, and apparel, it's apparent, are profound. And now, back to our show. SRN, the spirit of South York, SRN 1, and the 1KX network is proud.
The 1KX, and whatever happened to that? That was involved with the old Jiggy Jaguar. Okay, that's how it started. And I used to start it with talking, And then we did a collage that was bigger than the one, longer, I should say, bigger. The person talking in the collage above that wicked, really weird Baroque flat music, whatever that was somebody on the internet reading the first dialogue or dialogue of somebody in the original Planet of the Apes. I don't know, maybe it was Charlton Heston's part. I don't know. But what I'm going to do here now, as it gets later, I'm going to go to, let's see, I have to go to 3008. And at 3008, here's 3007. Right. It's perfect. This is perfect. I'm going to hit this and you're going to listen to Mr. Stein, may he rest in peace, Academy Award winner for the original makeup in Planet of the Apes. I will return after that. There's no interruption. We never interrupt a guest for sponsors when we had some sponsors and stuff. So this goes back 11 years almost to the night, right? This is, what did I say? Did I say April what? This was June. This was June 14th, 2007, Cthulhu Chronicles. Enjoy it, and I shall be back, and we'll do some more before the end of the show. Here goes.
Gump, I'm more than that, though. Way more than that, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. We're calling.
Hello, this is Maurice.
Hello, Mr. Stein. This is Frank Cthulhu of Cthulhu Chronicles. Good evening.
Well, good evening to you, Frank, and please call me Maurice.
Okay. Have you gone to England or to Australia and they've called you Morris?
Yes. Actually, they've called me Morris here they've called me Morris in California even.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess it's because they just can't figure out when to say it because the spelling is so darn the same, isn't it?
I know. It really is. I also, like when I go to Mexico, they call me Mauricio. They add an O to it.
Maurice, but they use Maurice, though.
Yeah, they use Maurice, but they call me Mauricio.
They don't call you Morriso.
No, not lately, anyway.
You just never know. You don't look like, and I know your picture's up on my blog for the show, and everyone now knows what you look like, too. You don't look like you have a short name, too. You look like someone who people genuinely call Maurice. Now, no one goes, right? Nobody calls you like Maury or anything, right?
No, when I was younger and I played ball until I was in my 50s, but when I was young and I played ball, they used to call me Big Mo, M-O.
Big Mo. Well, that's okay. Until your 50s, they called you Big Mo.
Well, when I played baseball, because I used to play third base, and I used to really creep up on the batter, and I looked twice as big as I was. And that was when I was a teenager, so that name sort of stuck with me, Big Mo.
Well, I'm not going to call you Big Mo. I'm going to call you Maurice. It's a wonderful name.
Well, thank you.
It is. It's a great name. Does that have something to do with, how do you get named Maurice if you're not connected to the French?
Well, my father and his family are from Poland. My mother and her family are from Russia. But when she was very young, they lived in Montreal, Canada.
Ah, there you go.
French Canadian.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
That's how I ended up with the name Maurice.
Well, that's great, because it's a country that is very closely associated with this program, Canada.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. Well, yes, it is.
I consider myself half U.S. and half Canadian.
When did you get to California?
Well, I was born in California.
Oh, I missed them.
My mother was born in Montreal.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay.
That's why I say I'm half and half.
Why would you also, because since you're Big Mo, Maurice, Mr. Stein, Monsieur Stein, how about that? Monsieur?
Monsieur.
How did you get the title of the Maestro of Makeup Education before we talk about what everybody really wants to hear a lot about, or as much as they can about, the original Planet of the Apes?
Well,
how do you get a name like that? I want to get a name like that. A tag.
I don't know. It's sort of something that happened over the years. You know, I'm a my background is that I'm a licensed cosmetologist and a teacher, but I started in the very early 60s, 61 or 62, going from doing cosmetology hair into walking into the entertainment industry and becoming a makeup artist.
Yeah.
But I sort of divided myself between the two careers. And because I did, I started working with a lot of the top cosmetologists in the world because they wanted to know more about the secrets of the entertainment industry. And I got a seat of the pants education in all different directions. And I was, as fast as I was learning, I was passing everything on that I learned to other people. And I guess in those days I was really way ahead of my time.
Is that because the other people couldn't afford the education?
It could have been a lot of that, but yeah. I was very lucky. I had three mentors.
Three?
Not just one, but I had three mentors.
I did too. Mo, Larry, and Curly. No, go ahead. I'm joking.
With one of those guys.
tell us your mentors.
Well, my first mentor was a man by the name of John Chambers.
John Chambers.
Yeah, he was the man that actually was the one that designed and created the original and all five of the Planet of the Apes.
All five. I was trying to figure out how many there were.
There were five of them.
The other man
was a man by the name of Harry Blake. He was the head of NBC's makeup and hair department.
Now, wait a second. That's Harry, not Harry.
No, Harry Blake.
Harry?
Yeah.
Harry Blake. Harold Blake.
He worked on, some of his people were Johnny Carson, Dean Martin, Anne Margaret, just many, many people. And I would work with him because he liked what I did, so he would have me work with him with a lot of those big stars when I was first starting out. The other guy was a guy called Harry Merritt.
Merritt.
Harry Merritt was the head of CBS makeup department. And one of his other claims to fame was an actress, singer that had been around many years. Her name was Doris Day.
Yes.
And a lot of people...
Terry Melcher's mother.
That's it.
Right? Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
That's right.
Anyway, those three guys taught me their area of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And with the accumulation of what these three top-notch makeup artists put into my hands and my brain, the only thing they wanted in return was for me to be able to pass on to the next generations, plural, what they had taught me, because they felt that I was a good teacher. And I think that is probably how the maestro came about, because...
Mentors of the maestro, they are then.
Yeah, by virtue of teaching a lot of people who are now considered some of the top makeup artists in our industry, or not even just in the entertainment industry, but in the beauty industry, because not that many years ago, I created a makeup line called Cinema Secrets, and the foundation is something that today really helps to generate me traveling around the world,
mm-hmm.
and it really has become what I call my hobby now, because to me, a good hobby is something that you really enjoy doing in your spare time, and it almost always is very enjoyable, but it usually costs you a lot of money.
Mm.
That's the definition of a hobby.
That is a good definition. And
I spend a lot of time doing, because of the foundations being so unique, I spend a lot of time teaching people how to use it in the medical industry for women that are going through chemo. When they're going through chemotherapy, the skin will get very sensitive and get very pale or pallid. And this product of ours, the Cinema Secrets makeup, it just goes on very, very thin. Because it's got no oil and no Vaseline in it, it can go on real thin, and it lasts for hours. And it works on some of the most sensitive skin without causing any problems at all.
These are not products that we could go to the store and get, are they?
Well, they are.
We can go to our regular store and get Cinema.
Not a regular store. No. You have to go into a beauty supply or a beauty salon.
Uh-huh.
A lot of spas around the world carry it. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest hospital on the East Coast is the Johns Hopkins Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They have a rehabilitation ward for burn survivors there. The only makeup they've been using for years is our makeup, and I've been there a couple of times to help retrain and educate the medical personnel. That's all the way from the doctors that do the surgery to the nurses that really work with the burn survivors.
Mm-hmm.
They also, one thing for your audience that might be interesting, people that are burned, when they live through it, they're no longer victims. They are survivors. And that's one of the first things I was taught when I started working with burn survivors many years ago is they are survivors, and they refer to us as normies. But that's something that I've really enjoyed doing over the years, being able to teach a lot of them how to put just a thin layer of a cream-based, oil-free makeup that will go on their skin thinner than a liquid makeup, but goes on and covers all of their skin discolorations. And the reason that's important is they need to go out into the public and not have people like you and me, the general public, stare at them. That's the sad thing. So that's something that really makes me feel good at this stage of my life, being able to
It's a service. Yeah, it's a service. It goes beyond what we the usual things we talk about. In terms of makeup or what people identify and associate with in terms of Hollywood makeup. We'll get back to Cinema Secrets in a second, though. I really want to get into this. How did you get involved, John Chambers? How did you get involved with this Planet of the Apes thing from the beginning? Were you in it from the beginning?
Pardon?
Yeah. How did you tell us about your Planet of the Apes experience?
Well, I had met John Chambers a couple of years before when we were working on a project at 20th Century Fox, and had sort of kept in contact with him because I realized how far ahead of time he was, and I offered to do anything that he would need in trade for me to be able to just watch him and learn. And that's the only way we could learn in those days. And I feel that my performance in helping him created the bond that we ended up having. And I was not the only one. There were three or four young men like myself who did the same thing with him. And one day I was talking to him he had called me on the phone about something else, and he said, "Listen, by the way, I'm working on a project that I want you to come over and I want to talk to you about. It's about monkeys." And that's all he said. And I said, "Sure," and I came over on the weekend, and he showed me some drawings of what they were looking at doing, and he said, "We're going to start sculpting pretty soon and then start coming up with some finalized looks."
He said monkeys.
And, yeah, just his reference was a feature with monkeys or a project that had monkeys in it. And, of course, it was more than just monkeys. It was, you know, the apes, the chimpanzees, the gorillas.
I still don't know exactly how that. I don't know that. I don't know what it's called. Would be the anthropological categories. I mean, apes aren't monkeys. Monkeys aren't apes. There are baby apes, but they're not chimps. And chimps aren't monkeys. Or monkeys aren't apes, right? I mean, did you learn any of that stuff?
Well, we sort of. How do I put it?
You cheated.
Bypassed the.
what is it? Poetic license, right?
We took a little theatrical license.
Okay, yeah.
But in taking some theatrical license to do Planet of the Apes, there were many, many changes for each of the characters, the chimpanzees, the gorillas, the apes. We wanted them each to have their own identification as a separate animal, but we also wanted it to look as realistic as possible, but to look at it as if it was many years into the future. And these animals had evolved some over the years.
So from the get-go, You got the crew, the makeup crew, who were more essential in a movie like this than before. You knew you weren't going to go in there with a whole bunch of those usual, you know, monkey outfits, you know, the things they'd been doing up until then, right? You wanted to do something something intrinsically important to, because it is in the script, character, different looking monkey per person, right? I mean,
every single main character in the first film was a special design for that character and the person playing that character. We actually sculpted each individual face.
And you took...
Each one was fitted to each of the characters.
So you had to take into consideration... I'm going to use Roddy McDowall because I really don't remember a lot of the other names of people on there who are in it. But Roddy McDowall, of course, would be the most famous monkey. Wouldn't he be the most famous?
Roddy was one of the most famous. Another one that was very famous from theater was a man whose first name was the same as mine. His name was Maurice Evans.
Maurice Evans. Yes,
He was a real Shakespearean kind of actor, and he played just a wonderful orangutan part. He was one of the main leads in it.
This is actually Planet of the Simians. I mean, because there were all sorts of. All of the apes had been. I didn't think about that. But now that I'm thinking about it, right?
Well, when you look at the film and you watch this first Planet of the Apes, as you watch each character appear and evolve, you can see them coming towards the camera, and you'll know who they are, because even though there's five gorillas, you'll be able to tell which gorilla is which, because each one of them has slightly different features.
Yeah.
Part of what caused that is the material that the facial appliance was made out of. It was made out of a foam rubber that John Chambers had really been responsible for creating for this. And that foam rubber, when it was glued in its entirety to an individual face, within 30 minutes or less, it actually took on the form of that individual face.
Oh, wow. That's
how you could look at three chimpanzees.
And that was, at that time, that was revolutionary then, huh?
Well, think of how long ago. That's almost
68,
40 years ago.
Oh, I don't want to think about that. 68,
yeah, well,
40 years ago. Holy God.
I'm remembering how old I was when I did that now.
Wow, yeah. And
so that was almost 40 years ago.
So it would adhere to their face, and it would settle on their own characteristics.
Yeah, it would actually conform to their if they had high cheekbones. If they had a very high forehead, if they had a protruding chin, each one of those things would play an important part in the shaping. I mentioned chin just now, and people have asked me in the past, did you ever have any problems? Well, we had a lot of problems before the film started that we tried to resolve. We looked for problems that we could fix before we started shooting.
Right.
One of the things that we didn't foresee was when we were shooting, I don't remember how many weeks into the film, it was one of the characters. I was troubleshooting at this time, working on several different characters.
Right.
And one of the gorillas had taken a break and had eaten some food. And usually what we would do is we would take the bottom chin off when they had lunch. And then we would reattach it because it always came loose. Well, he just decided to eat without that. So it came loose, and we just glued it back on. Within 3 minutes, it popped, and it wasn't sticking. So we tried and glued it again, and then we wiped all the glue off and put fresh glue on, not being able to figure out what was wrong. Well, finally, I said, we got to take his chin off and start from scratch, or maybe put another chin on. But I thought the chin had just gotten very wet from perspiration, and maybe that's... So when we took the chin off, there were five peas in between the chin, the fake chin, and his chin. 5 vegetable peas in there.
Vegetable peas?
Vegetable peas. You know, little peas that you eat for dinner when you're eating a steak.
So you didn't check what he ate beforehand. You figured, that's a gorilla. You know, they're munching on the bananas there. And
yeah, I figured it was just bananas, right?
Maybe he had peas with bananas and peas.
Well, when we took that off and those things fell out, everybody laughed. And it sort of relaxed everybody. And we just cleaned it up. And in about another less than 10 minutes, we had it back on, and he was ready to work.
I would never think a pea would be that powerful.
Well,
maybe that's what pea is for. Pea is for powerful, huh?
Well, you have to understand that those pieces of foam rubber appliance that we were attaching were made to fit a particular contour of a face.
Mm.
If there was anything in there that disrupted it like this, one of them might have, or two of them might have gotten away with it. To have 5 of them in there was just not enough room in there for it to adhere.
What the heck time did these daily shoots get started? Because you had a whole, I mean, with so many people, that having to be made up, right?
After about a couple of weeks of shooting in the studios, we went out to an area in Arizona called Page, Arizona.
Oh, that place is used for a lot of cowboys stuff too.
Yeah, but it has a gorgeous amount of little streams and fast little rivers. And my makeup call in the morning was 3:48 in the morning.
Wow.
We were given what was called 12 minutes setup time. So my time to start the makeup was 4 a.m. So in order to start at 4 a.m., I had to be there at 3:48 in the morning. Each makeup, and I was scheduled the first day to do 3 makeups. And the first day I was there at 3:48 or whatever, started at 4 o'clock with a approximately 3.5 hour makeup, and that allows for about 10-minute break in the middle for the actor to get up and walk around and stretch and go to the bathroom if he has to, and maybe for me too. Then we'd finish his makeup. Then I'd have to clean up my whole area from what I did on him. I would have to immediately set it up to do the next makeup, which would take 20 to 30 minutes between cleaning up and setting up. So that's about 4.5 hours between cleanup one and setting up and doing, and I did 3 of those in a day, and I finished at about 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And then walked over to the car that was waiting for me, and it took me to the hotel. I had enough time to take a shower, get in bed, go to sleep, wake up.
Sure, that's like, 4 hours? That hardly 4 hours sleep without any chance to wind down, huh?
Yeah, well, I did that for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, we were all, you know, younger then.
But you know what? We were young, and it was thrilling, and we worked 6 and 7 days a week doing that.
When this was being done, I know this is a question everybody asks somebody associated with a classic, but was there a sense, was there a sense that this was going well and this was going to be like a gigantic thing? After all, you did have, you got this Charlton Heston. I mean, his career was kind of wavering around that point there too. I mean, before he took on this, I mean, he was just kind of, you know, there. I mean, done some great things, but, you know, it was Charlton Heston, getting older Charlton Heston. And so you had him to run the thing. And you had this project, and I know Rod Serling was involved in writing that, too.
Yeah,
I know.
Well, from the
What was the sense of what was going on there?
When we were prepping this for weeks and months, it got more exciting when we got closer to the final look of each character. The first day, and I'll never forget that, the first day that we were ready to shoot, and it was a very large scene, all of us were looking at what we had created. And we weren't even looking at the sets or the costumes or anything. We were all in awe of what we literally had created, which had never, ever been thought of or done before. And I believe, honestly, to this day, that from that minute on, there wasn't anything that any of us wouldn't have done to make it the best thing that we ever did in our life.
I don't think there's any doubt at all, and I certainly cannot defy what you're saying in any possible way. I understand that the excitement, and I could see that you all knew it was revolutionary. But were you all sitting there? Was everybody pretty much convinced that this was going to work? That there was an audience out there for this? Because this was like, what are we doing here? Is this going to go right in? Is this going to tank? Or are we doing the right thing? Was there any second guessing? Or were you so carried away with the excitement that it was like, oh, everybody's going to love this. They got to love this.
I don't know that we ever once, and I have to speak for myself and the people that I was the closest with.
Sure.
I don't think there was ever a minute when we didn't think that this was going to really be a hit.
Okay.
Now, when we thought it was going to be a hit, we're thinking in terms of, God, this is going to be a great movie. Now, we had no idea that they were going to do a Planet of the Apes 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Sure, yeah.
We just knew that from what we were seeing, the public had never seen anything like this before. And I remember, when I say we, I mean me too.
Yeah.
I would, normally when I'm through making somebody up, if I can go sit down and get out of the way and just relax for a while, that's what I've done on a lot of other films that I worked on that were really big, big projects too. With this one, I found myself as close behind the camera as I could be. I wanted to watch every scene.
Mm-hmm.
It was exciting. It was exciting to be able to be part of something that we were doing at the time. None of us realized how much of an impact this would make on the special effects industry. Many of the things that we did on that first film are still being done today. Many of the products and the techniques, especially that we did then,
mm-hmm.
are still being, they're not dated. Grant you, there are some new types of products, new silicones, a few new adhesives on the market, but not too many. The three main adhesives that we worked with almost 40 years ago on that film are still the same exact adhesives that we're using today. They've been improved a little bit, but they're the same ones used in the same manner. The spirit gun that we used to glue on the facial pieces.
So that's what it's called, a spirit gun?
We call it spirit gun. It's an amber or a tea-colored adhesive that is, for most people, totally safe to put on the skin. We've made some changes with it. We manufacture that. It's Cinema Secrets. We manufacture that now as one of our Halloween items for the public all over the world.
Mm.
And one of the things that we changed, it was an ether alcohol base before, and it had quite a pungent odor. So when you're working with it in a very confined area, you could get a little dizzy.
Mm.
But now that's totally gone, and the materials we use to make it are a lot milder. It isn't any milder on the skin. It's never been a problem. Remember, we had actors who wore that for several months, 12, 15, 18 hours a day. And as long as we were allowed to take the amount of time that we had to take to remove it from them, we had no skin problems. Now, we also had products available for them, you know, to take home at night and to use to help soften their skin. There were a few actors who had a few skin irritation problems, and my feeling was those are the actors that were in a hurry and wanted to pull it off.
Mm.
Rather than having it removed properly, because we even had makeup artists there that were assigned to do nothing but help to clean up actors when they finished their scene any time during the day or evening.
What about all of the there were hundreds, and I don't know if there were hundreds, I guess there were, because they didn't have CGI in those days, but all the extras, all the monkey gorilla extras and all the ones in the background there, unlike unlike what Tim Burton did in the remake, where he was able to just, you know, cut and paste and copy computer-generated images to make thousands of monkeys, you guys had, there were battalions of monkeys out there. Were some of those guys just in suits or stuff, or was everybody completely made up from scratch?
Everybody that came within a reasonable distance of the camera was made up with the same kind of an appliance.
Okay, so then
the only difference being that the main characters that talked, each one of them had their own facial appliance made specifically for them. Ones that were the stunt people that doubled them, which there were a lot of those, the ones that were just a few feet past the camera, we would take some of the pieces that were made for somebody else, and we would make it work with them. Because that way they could yell and scream, move their nose, and open and close their eyes.
And
but the ones that were a little farther away, we had made hundreds of latex masks.
Just to wear.
We remade those, and those were all marked so that each extra had their own mask, so that every day they could put the same one on, and it would slip right over their head. We'd make their eye black, and it would be, we had Velcro even in those days, and we would just attach it to the back, and then we put the collar, the hair collar over it, and they look exactly the same as the ones that were real close to the camera.
Maurice Stein, we're talking to Maurice Stein, who's a veteran and a revolutionary makeup person out there in Hollywood and the creator of CinemaSecrets.com. You talk about it. Let me take this one short break, Maurice. You okay? I'm not keeping you from anything here now, are you? Got a couple more minutes here?
No, I'm just about 50 yards away from my grandson, who's graduating right now as we talk from high school.
Well, you'll get...
I snuck out.
Good.
So that I could be able to do this for you. They'll be at his graduation.
You're a champ, and you're going to go right back as soon as we're done. This is Cotolo Chronicles, and we're with Maurice Stein exclusively here on Cotolo Chronicles Y2K Plus 7. We got, what, June 14th? Do you believe this, Maurice? It's the middle of the year already. And we're brought to you, of course, tonight by the shortstop.com, shortstop jeans, and casual slacks for men. How tall are you, Maurice?
I'm 6 foot tall.
Oh, you're
190 pounds.
You're 6 foot, so you don't need you can't get short. You don't need short pants. No, that's okay. Well, anyway, we'll tell you more about that when Maurice gets back to it. Okay, let's get back to this. Now, I just wanted to ask about Charlton Heston. So he didn't have to show up early, right? He just had to. He just had regular makeup in that there. So that was it for him.
When you think of him, I get.
Give us a good Charlton Heston story. You got a good Charlton Heston story?
Yeah, I get winded when I think of Charlton Heston.
Because why? He's just a ball of
fire? One of the things that he did was he was quite an athlete. He played tennis, and he liked to run.
Uh-huh.
And he really was very quiet during the day because he really was concentrating on the script. But in the morning, when I didn't have somebody that I had to make up real early, and he was there, and he'd get ready to run. He'd come out of his trailer. He says, "What are you doing?" And he knew I played ball a lot. We had talked before. He says, "Come on, keep me company." And before I knew it, there was 3, 4, 5, or 7 of us running in the Malibu Hills up and down. But by then, I had gotten smart and brought tennis shoes because it was warm, and we were wearing shorts anyway or cut-off Levi's. But he was really a nice guy to be around, as far as I was concerned. When we were in Page, Arizona, one time, he was standing on the cliff, overlooking about 400 feet down was the water.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he started doing a little section from the Ten Commandments. Everybody he was trying to get the water to part for everybody, and it just, and there was a lot of tension at the time because we were running behind. The temperature was well over 115. It was probably approaching 120. So everybody was really hot, warm, irritable, and he just broke everybody up because instead of doing his lines, he just looked around and he took on the stature of Moses. It just had a sense.
I can imagine that. That'd be quite a moment. And I can imagine that that's not the first or the last time that Charlton was able to use that as a little gimmick, huh?
Well, I've heard other stories about him doing things like that. But, you know, just like some of the projects that I've worked on over the years, people always go back to some of the most famous ones. And for him, one of his most famous things was the Ten Commandments.
Yeah. It's a shame, too, because I don't mean it's a shame, but, I mean, there are – that is such a dynamic and identifiable piece of film. But you know how I always think of – you know, and it's funny, it's the exact opposite. Remember The Greatest Show on Earth?
Absolutely.
I always, and I just, I love that character he played, and I'm not a big Charlton Heston fan. I liked him in, I mean, he was great in Touch of Evil, and these other, you know, other, he's done a lot of different things, but I love that, I just love that head of the circus guy that he did in Greatest Show on Earth. It's so different.
Well, you know, he was, as I said, quite an athlete.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe one of the reasons, you know, that I got along with him pretty well, because I told him I couldn't play tennis worth a darn, and of course he was ready to walk away. I said, but I've been playing baseball all my life, and I played football in high school, and then I boxed until I got in the Army and found out there were a lot of people better than me when it came to boxing.
Yeah, but then you had to do real fighting then, huh?
Yeah, but you know what? You know, the good thing about that is, yeah, I was in the Army, and like everybody, it wasn't one of my favorite parts of my life, but now it is part of my life because I also work with veterans. I am very close with the head of the prosthetic department at the Veterans Hospital here.
Okay.
And I do a lot of I do stuff with him. He'll make prosthetic pieces for veterans that have lost portions of their face from service-related injuries, or some of the old-timers, which everybody seems to forget about these days, including our government, I think. And these guys need, maybe they, some of the ones that I've helped have had cancer and they've lost an eye and part of a nose or part of an eye and cheek and nose. And Dr. Bill Clairieux goes in and really designs and sculpts an artificial piece that will fit in there to make them look natural. And then he'll have me come in and put an eyebrow on where there is none that will help to hide the line at the top. And then I can add a very thin type of a mustache to hide it around there. And anyway, I can do stuff like that. And again, I consider that my hobby because, again, that's part of what I learned from some of the masters 25, 35, 40 years ago. And I'm able to do a little bit of that now for people that are veterans that a lot of the world has forgot about.
Right. And, well, the world has not forgotten about some of the other people in some of these other movies that I see you're associated with, including Barbara Streisand. What did you do on Funny Girl?
Well, I was her makeup artist for 3 days.
Okay.
That was it.
Well, that's more than most people are.
Yeah, well, after 3 days...
3 days, what'd you do? What are you saying? Only 3 days, because...
It was... I decided that I'd been around a few years, and I didn't want to just... To this day, she's a very bright lady who knows exactly what she wants.
Oh, I'm sure she is, and that makes her pretty demanding, huh?
And, you know, she was the same when she was a young girl then that she is now.
That's what I hear,
She wanted to do her own makeup because she knew exactly what she wanted.
Mm.
So, as a professional makeup artist, what she really needed me for is to check it as she was doing it and then to help her a little if she needed it, but to also carry her stuff around from one area to another. And I just have never been that kind of a person to be somebody's assistant when it came to that. Not once I...
Well, she was also, I guess that's what made her such a hands-on person when she directed.
Absolutely.
She wanted to know everything about it, right? From.
Do you know that because of her being the way she was, it was the best thing that could have happened to me because what we did is we assigned a young man who was brand new and willing to carry the mirror and push everything around, and I was assigned to design the makeup for the girls that were in the big wedding scene. Mm. These were about a dozen and a half Las Vegas showgirls who we had to do very, very avant-garde eyes on them
mm-hmm.
with a lot of false eyelashes. And it was a lot of creative work doing different looks on different girls. That was a lot more interesting and challenging and artistic fun.
What about MASH? Now, this is a picture that a lot of people, of course, well, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big fan of this movie, but and I guess I'm in the minority there. I mean, everyone seems to love this movie, what was going on there? I mean,
I had done Planet of the Apes, and I was talking one day to the head of the makeup department, which was Mr. Ben Nye, Sr.
Ben, oh, okay. Now, there's a name you see constantly on the credits, right, back in those days?
He had called me in his office, and he said, "You're a Korean War veteran, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, I've got a little project coming up that you might be good on."
I see.
"And can I give you the script?" And I said, "Of course." Well, I got chills when I read it, but I thought, you know, this is a real challenge. So I told him, of course, I'd love to be able to do this. And I ended up being the lead makeup artist on it. It was hard, but it was a lot of fun. The hard part was learning to get good at playing tackle basketball. Remember some of the young guys in there? A guy named Donald Sutherland.
Yes, yeah. And speaking of Barbara Streisand, there's her first husband,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, her
Elliot Gould.
Elliot was in it.
Yeah.
And if you think about Donald and Elliot and a couple of the other guys that were like 6'2", 6'3", and I'm 6 foot, they were all taller than me. And we used to play basketball sometimes on days when they were shooting, like helicopters landing or things when they didn't need actors for a few hours. We'd play around, and I had to cut their hair into a military style before the film started. So I was not on good, lovable relationships with any of them. As a matter of fact, they did anything and everything they could to mess me up. Like one time taking all my makeup out of my case and putting a brick in it. I walked from where I kept my makeup case overnight over to where I was going to work thinking it was the right. And when I opened it up, there wasn't very much in it. Just a brick. But anyway, we played basketball and we played pretty rough, but they knew they could play rough with me, but I couldn't do anything to hurt their faces.
That's right. So, but are you saying you wanted to, Maurice? There are times you just wanted to punch them, didn't it? Isn't it?
And it's interesting. I still see some of those guys from years ago about 5 or 6 years ago. Donald Sutherland came walking into the store. Now, when him and I did MASH, we both had hair that had no gray in it. Now, we both have gray or white hair.
Silver foxes. Yeah, I could see you guys next to one another. Wow.
And I was
distinguished.
Standing, this was during Halloween, and Halloween is like our busiest time of the year at Cinema Secrets. And I'm standing there talking to a man by the name of Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about, wow.
Yeah, and Dick and I are laughing, and we're talking about how when we first started working together, how we both had dark hair. Anyway, Dick has been a Halloween nut for many years. He loves it. And during the season, every year, he doesn't miss it. He comes by to see what's new, and I tell everybody he's one of my best students because he loves doing it. He always said when he was younger, if he didn't make it as an actor, he'd wanted to be a makeup artist. So over the years, he'd go up to my lab with me, and I'd show him how things were done there. And he got really good at making these. He made a full life cast of himself.
A full cast of himself?
A full cast of him. He made it in sections.
Uh-huh.
And it looked very lifelike when he got done. So he was pretty good. Anyway, one day, he was standing in the store in the Halloween section part, and we were talking. and Donald Sutherland comes in. Well, now, Dick Van Dyke has white hair.
Right.
I've got white hair and a beard.
Right.
And here comes Donald Sutherland in with white hair and a beard. But Don had never met Dick Van Dyke. So I called Don over and introduced them.
Isn't that funny?
Now we're all laughing because we're talking about when we all met each other, how much different our hair was.
Right. Everybody thinks that everybody knows everybody else in Hollywood. Isn't that amazing?
Well, they do, but...
Not in that way, but yeah.
I probably see more actors and actresses and people behind the camera now on a regular basis than I did maybe when I worked, because we're right in our CineSecret store is right in the center of where all the film studios are.
Let's talk to Vince. Let's straighten this out so that people know what we're talking about. There is a physical storefront place called Cinema Secrets.
Yeah, it's...
And where are you?
We're in Burbank, or Toluca Lake, which is in the center of Burbank. We're about 3 blocks away from Bob Hope's house.
I was just going to say, Toluca Lake is how I remember where Bob Hope's place used to be there.
Yeah, we're 3 blocks away from Warner Brothers. We're 6 or 7 blocks away from Screen Gems in Columbia. We're a half a mile from Universal. We're a mile away from NBC and a mile away from Disney Studios. So we're right in the hub of it. And the reason we are is because I picked this area knowing that it was the center of where there were almost 10 studios.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before any of the high-rise buildings went up. Now there's 5 times as many people in the area working.
Yeah. I haven't been there in a long time, but I hear it sure has grown up there. It used to be, the valley used to be Wilds, actually, right?
Yeah, it was, but it's pretty grown up now.
Mm-hmm. So anybody can walk into Cinema Secrets and get a gel or a thing or a...
Cinema Secrets caters to the entertainment industry, but our biggest clientele is the general public.
Sure.
Because we might have, 4,000 or 6,000 people within a radius that are between the actors and the extras and all the makeup artists and hairdressers. Just the makeup artists and hairdressers alone, there's 3,000 or 4,000 of them in the area. But then when you call the grips and electricians and the secretaries and the lawyers, and there's thousands of them, but they come into our store as well as the general public, and it's a regular store in part of it, but part of it, they can come in and they can see masks that we've created. They can see some of the Hollywood memorabilia in there. We have tours that come and stop at our place quite a bit. Students from out of the country that come in, and we do classes for them. We do a lot of free classes.
Now, for all the people, most of the people listening to this and throughout the life of this program are way anywhere else. I mean, they're nowhere near there, and they won't get there, but they can go to cinemasecrets.com, right? And can you buy stuff there?
Absolutely. We've got the website up, and it has all of our regular makeup that we were talking about that's available for men and women, but we also have all of our special effects and Halloween makeup. But better than that, when they go on the website, it's in 3 sections. The first section says beauty, the second says beast, and the third says support. So the first section of beauty is our cosmetic line. The part that says beast is our Halloween and special effects, and there's probably about 300 different costumes, as well as masks. And if any of the people listening are looking for extra body parts, like fingers or hands or necks or chest or legs, they could even ask. They can call up and ask for a right leg up to the knee, and we send those to them.
Wow.
We see all that stuff all the time.
You mean somebody? You mean to make a lamp or something?
Oh, no. During Halloween.
Oh, okay.
Halloween has become the second biggest holiday of the year in the United States and Canada.
Is that so?
It's next to Christmas. And the only reason Christmas beats it out is the home decorations and the presents. But now people are buying things to decorate their home for Halloween. And we make, you'll see a lot of it on our website, but we make a lot of things. I mean, we probably make 3,000 or 4,000 different items now.
Wow.
All this started as a hobby. My wife did not want me to retire and do nothing. She said, you're going to die young, plus you're going to probably get in trouble. You better find a hobby. So this Cinema Secrets started out as a hobby.
Well, why would you have retired in the first place? Why didn't you just keep doing films and stuff? Why did you decide to just stop?
I reached a point where, when I was 50, I reached a point where I said, you know, I've made a very good living. I was always in the top percentage, income-wise. But because of that, I had missed a couple of birthdays that were very important. I missed a graduation one time that there was nothing I could do about. Just things like that. And I decided that at this stage in my life, I wanted to be with my children. And I got thinking about it. And I thought, if I could start a business where I could make my two sons and my daughter full partners, and if it succeeded, they would move away, and their children, my grandchildren, would be around here, and I'd be able to see them all the time. Well, now, 23 years later, they're all partners. We have a very successful business. They all help to run the company. Each one of them have their own area of expertise. I've even got two of my older grandsons working. One's working in customer service. The other one's working helping with the new website that they're putting up. It's a lot of fun. I get to see all my children and a lot of my grandchildren every day. I was lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I tried something, and it worked.
Well, that answers my question entirely. So it's a wonderful family business, Cinema Secrets, then.
And, again, we welcome the public to come in or to go on our website. Anything that they want, they can order, and we keep everything that they see on the, because we manufacture so much of everything they see on the website,
uh-huh.
We have it in stock all the time. And we ship all over the world because we have distributors all over the world now. Well,
what?
I shouldn't say all over. In about 20 countries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We do ship stuff even to military bases now. And I do a lot of work. I do a certain amount of work with different military installations. I just finished doing some work in Southern California at a place called 29 Palms. The Marines at Camp Pendleton,
mm-hmm.
About 20-something years ago when I started, they had asked me to come out there with some of the injuries that I created when I created MASH. And then some of the bigger ones that I created after that, I went out there to help them make the injuries look more realistic for their amphibious landing. And then I did it again about 12 years ago, and I've made stuff. Now the military and the police department, even the medical departments, call us to get what we call our disaster or injury kits.
Injury kits. I'd like to have an injury kit. I wish I could afford an injury kit. I would just.
Well, you know how bizarre it is. I still think about it. Where a woman walks in and says, "Oh, I want some cream for my face," and somebody else comes in that's working on a movie and say, "I need two right legs and I need a left hand."
Yeah.
And then somebody says, "And could I get a bottle of regular blood and a bottle of thick blood?" Because we make all that.
Well, different. That's right. You have different kinds of blood. We'd like that.
We have a regular blood that sort of drips, and it's called FX blood. Then we have a blood that doesn't drip, and it goes wherever you put it, and it stays there. And but it looks like it's going to drip. So that's called blood gel. And, again, these are things that we created originally when we worked on movies like.
Just give me an idea. Not that, I mean, this is something somewhat frivolous. It's not something that anybody would want unless they wanted to have some kind of party or something like that. But what's the price of blood? What's a jar? Where does it come in?
You could buy a 2-ounce bottle of blood for like $6.
Okay, but that 2 ounces of blood, what is that going to do? You know, so how much? They sell it by the quart?
Oh, yeah, you could buy a quart for, I don't know prices, but it's very inexpensive, maybe $16 or $18 for a quart. But that's enough to make an awful big mess.
Wow.
And one of the things we do, the police department does something that I think is wonderful. They have a program called Every 15 Minutes.
Okay.
And they simulate a car accident with teenagers. And then makeup artists go there, and they make some teenagers up that are injured in a two-car crash.
Oh, this is like shock therapy.
And they take cars that have really been mangled. They'll put some blood on them, and they'll put fake broken bones and different things like that. And then they'll have ambulances come, and the fire department comes to put the fire out. And they'll take some away in an ambulance, and then you see other people being pulled out of the car, covered or put into the plastic zipper bags and put into the other car, which means they're dead. And the whole school is sitting there watching this, and you can see the chill on them. So, again, that's something that
scared
we don't
straight.
Have products for.
Scared straight. Let me ask you a weird question, and I don't know if it's weird. Perhaps you get this question all the time. Let's say that I have a considerable amount of leisure income or what have you, and I decide I want to become a master of disguise, right? I mean, I want to be able to, this is what I'm going to do. I want to be able to go out every couple of days or whatever it is I want to go out, and I want to disguise myself. Or I want to be, let's say this, I want to be a private detective. Let's say I want to be a private detective, and I want to disguise myself because I'm going to be taking pictures of people and stuff like that. What are the basics that I would need to learn makeup, right? So that I would look real.
Well, it would take.
Does that take a lot of education?
It would take about 3 to 4 months of a course to really learn how to do that. But I will tell you that in the past, I have had people come to us that said they wanted to learn how to disguise themselves,
mm-hmm.
and there have been 2 times where I've had to call the FBI because I didn't like what I was hearing.
Right.
There was one time I had a man come in and he wanted to change the color of his skin. He wanted to change the shape of his face.
Wow.
And change his wig. And he wanted to be able to walk up to people that knew him and for them not to know. To make a long story short, it really bothered me. I called a detective that I knew in the Burbank Police Department, who in turn called somebody else. They ended up sending 2 undercover police officers when he came the next time, and they arrested him.
Wow.
What he was trying to do was disguise himself. He had fake passports for this new look for himself.
Oh, he was, I see.
And his son. He was going through a divorce, and he was going to kidnap his son and take him out of the country.
Mm.
And we were able to stop that.
So what you're telling me is you don't get a lot of people coming up to you and saying, you know, I'd really like to be a master of disguise. Are you saying
well,
that?
We do get some.
We legitimate.
Do help them, but we need to do background checks on them.
Right, right.
I have had private detectives.
Right.
I have many private detectives now who buy beards, mustaches, wigs.
There you go. That's what you're sure. Right.
But they have identification.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We know who they are.
So you mean you get suspicious if someone really wants is like really intense about this because detectives really don't get that intense, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, they don't. Do you remember how many years ago it was? A young man by the name of O.J.
Yeah, sure.
You remember the episode about him buying a beard?
He bought a... He bought a beard?
Yeah, a beard and a mustache.
Okay. And no, I don't remember that. But.
The district attorney let it out. He let it slip where it was purchased. And it was at our store at Cinema Secrets.
Okay.
So when the trial came, that came up because he was an actor. We knew him. And it was not unusual for an actor to come in and say, I'm doing a play, I need to get a this and a that. And we have that happen all the time.
Right. But in this
actors and actresses, so that was not unusual.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Well, that, I guess that would be, that would really be an isolated and incident. I mean, you know, be, you know, a guy like O.J., that would be isolated. And it never came up in the trial that he was, that if he was doing it, he was wearing a fake beard, did it?
No, though, they just brought the fact up that he had purchased it.
Right, so
they didn't know what he was going to be doing with it, and then we were questioned about it.
Well, in these United States of America, can a person go buy a disguise if he wants?
Of course they can. You know, if they couldn't buy a disguise, I wouldn't be doing part of the business that I do. We have a lot of fun.
It doesn't have to be Halloween, all right?
Well, there's Mardi Gras, there's all kinds of carnivals and things that go on all over the world. So we sell these things on our website.
Clowns and magicians, too? Not, maybe not clowns, but magicians? How about magicians? You probably get a lot of that.
Magicians, we've also made special props for magicians in the past.
Especially with the Magic Castle there and that concentration of magicians, right?
Magic Castle is one of my favorites. I've been a member for over 30 years there.
Boy, that is a great... You really got to be... You're really privileged to, if you can get in there, huh? That's
well,
a great place.
What?
A lot of
you
people...
Ever come,
I've been there. I was there.
Well, next time you come out to California, let me know ahead of time and we'll go for dinner.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, that would be great. It's, what a great place that is. So, like, if it, would you make... You'd make some props, like, because they do use a lot, they use an awful lot of props. There's a lot of special effects and makeup.
We make all kinds of different things that they require for those shows, and we usually don't talk about the things we make because it's part of their act. And
you know the guy who eats, right? Did you ever see the guy who, I don't remember his name, but I just remember seeing him once, and this is how I remember seeing him. He eats the razor blades, and there's the blood all over
him. Those things bother me. I don't like to watch that.
But that's all, obviously it's all fake, but I mean that's a lot of money and props.
That's certainly
isn't it? Yeah, I mean there's a guy who's buying he's buying blood by the gallon, I think, right?
Well, it's something that he can buy it from us on our website very easy, but it's not something. You know, one of the things I was going to mention, if any of your listeners are really interested in learning more about makeup, whether it's straight corrective makeup or Halloween or character makeup like that, they can actually email me personally. I've always answered every email.
And the personal email is on the cinemasecrets.com, isn't it? It says contact?
No, my personal one is
let's get it.
Maurice, Maurice, at cinemasecrets.com.
I'm writing it down, too, because... I may want to talk to you more about disguising myself.
Okay. Well, please, now you have credibility. Wouldn't be a problem.
You don't have to do a background check on me.
The thing we tell people once we do the background check is if you have enough time and enough money, we can do anything you want within reason.
Yeah.
Now, we can't make a full face look thinner, but we can make a thinner face look fuller. You have to think about that for a second.
That makes sense. I mean, it's only magic to a degree, isn't it?
That's it.
It's magic to it.
We're not magicians, and I am definitely not a plastic surgeon. You know, as I said, I work a lot with burn survivors because of my special foundation. It goes on. It's a silicone-based cream foundation, which is very unusual. It has no oil and no Vaseline in it, but it's highly pigmented with mineral pigments. So a lot of people like it for every day because it's 100% waterproof.
Now, you said, wait a second, you said that before. Let me understand this, too, and then I think the audience would like to know this, too. You said this before. It's a product that doesn't have oil and Vaseline, as if oil and Vaseline is bad or weird or what?
Well,
why is it makes it special?
A lot of the makeups from the entertainment industry were made with oil and Vaseline.
And what kind of oil is that?
Mineral oil.
Okay, mineral oil.
We use castor oil for putting on makeup over these appliances, the Planet of the Ape appliances, and then the artificial injuries that we did in MASH, we also put this on. But this makeup, we're using for high-definition television now, too, because it goes on like a stain. It goes on heavier than a stain, but you can literally wipe it off after 30 seconds. It's also silicone-based. And silicone is more or less an evaporative kind of product. We call it a volatile. So once it's been on the skin for about 30 seconds and the evaporation takes place, you wipe any of the excess makeup off. Men love it because it goes on so thin like a stain. It's thinner than a powder would be. And it doesn't look like makeup, even if you're within what we call conversation length of a person. And they can go swimming with it. Or if you're working or living in an area that's very hot, you can perspire for an hour, wipe the perspiration off, and the makeup is still there.
And I'm amiss in not making a note of this before, but you brought up something here now that I think we should address before you leave, because I don't want to keep you anymore from the party. But how is high definition television, this incredibly strange focus on detail, how is this affecting the makeup industry in general?
Well, it has increased our business threefold because of our foundation. But if people in the audience don't understand high definition, think of one square inch. And in order to get the image that they see on television, that one square inch has 2,000 dots in it. And that's how they can, and then you have a lot of square inches that make up the face. But now in high definition, there might be 6,000 dots in that same square. So what it does is it makes everything show up in much better detail. So when we used to put makeup on the way we did in order to hide things, we can no longer do that. We can't put a layer of makeup on. The makeup has to go on thinner than liquid makeup in order for it to look natural. If you watch, some of the shows that are on high definition, like there's a military show on called The Unit.
Right.
They use our Cinema Secrets Foundation on that. The opposite direction is a show called Las Vegas. And you've got all those beautiful women and guys on there. And again, that's being shot in high definition. A lot of the CNN news, different places all over the world are starting to get into that now. And they're finding that some of the foundations that they've used in the past weren't satisfactory. So they've been switching and they've been looking for different things.
So
word of mouth does it better than anything.
So what you're saying is that I don't want to use CNN I guess we could use it as an example because those are talking heads. All right, so if we're looking at a person's head, face, in regular 2,000 dots or 200 dots, whatever it is, regular definition.
Yeah.
If we're looking at it, now suddenly we're looking in high definition, so
right.
Are we just, if there's no makeup, are we going to see the imperfections amplified, or are we going to see the imperfections as they actually are? That's what I don't understand about high definition. I mean, is it amplifying stuff, or is it just showing us more real?
It doesn't amplify. It doesn't make them larger unless their face image on a screen is bigger than life. If it's the same as life, you're going to be able to see the imperfections because they will stand out more. They won't be larger.
Okay.
They will stand out more. iDef doesn't make things bigger. It makes them show up more.
So it's just more difficult if a person has a scar. It's more difficult to cover with iDef than it is with regular. That's what you're saying?
And makeup doesn't cover a scar. Only thing makeup can do is cover the discoloration associated with a scar.
Okay, that was...
Now, that's something that we're known with the Cinema Secrets makeup. We can take somebody with a birthmark and make their face look natural by putting a thin layer of the Cinema Secrets makeup on it.
Yeah. Yeah. What else, what would be the toughest thing in high def to address on a person's body?
The toughest thing would, to me, because I'm dealing with makeup on the face, the toughest thing to me would to be to put makeup on a man or a woman that did not have real nice skin. We needed to make their skin look as flawless as possible.
So making skin look more milky
more and natural and flawless, when they don't have that type of skin.
Mm.
And thank goodness we've been able to do that more than once. And it's when we do that that other people in the entertainment industry see it, and they always research to find out what it was that was used, just like any other industry. Mm-hmm. If you see something that really works, you sort of try to backtrack and find out where it came from, what it is, and then you do the same thing or try to do as close as you can.
How much different is doing the fake stuff? I mean, is it more? You know, to put on a beard, it's more difficult in high def than it is,
beards,
or just different?
Yeah, no, beards, any kind of facial hair is much harder to do today than yesterday. Hair is a fake beard or a mustache is created by sewing individual hairs and making a knot in them on a piece of what we call lace. It looks like window screen, but it's made out of usually like a silk or a nylon lace or a screening material, and the hairs are sewn in and knotted with either one, two, or three, or four hairs. And then a little bit of the lace is left at the top, and when it's glued on with spirit gum, the spirit gum itself helps to diminish the look of the lace in the past. It's done that for film and television. With high definition, we've had to change that a little bit, because no matter how much we try to hide that little edge of lace, it could still show on an extreme close-up.
Do you think digital technology is going to play a role in the makeup? Do you think maybe eventually there'll be a time where you just don't have to do that much as a hands-on makeup person, because they'll be able to just...
This is something that scared everybody about 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I never felt that it would do away. When you look at digital, you can still... Now, we're five, six, maybe... 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years away from having them do that to where you can't tell the difference between digital and reality. But there are things, you know, digital doesn't come cheap.
Right, right. You mean so it's even more expensive than doing, than getting a person?
There are going to be many, many times at this point, from the knowledge that I have, which is a little above average. Digital is still a lot more expensive than having a qualified professional makeup artist make up the people in front of the camera. I would not, if I was a professional makeup artist at this point and I was working all the time, I would not worry about digital taking my job away.
Mm-hmm.
At least not in the foreseeable future, because as I said, digital is still more expensive, from what I've seen, than hiring a qualified professional makeup artist.
This is probably a good time for man and technology, because everything is working in tandem right now, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I agree. You know, you couldn't have said it any better. I find that I see so many makeup artists and technicians and special effects people, and I see them in my retail store on a regular basis, and I hear them talking about what they are doing digitally, and the makeup artist talking about what he or she is doing to complement that or to work right alongside of it. It's happening right now, and it really is man and machine more than ever before now.
Maurice at CinemaSecrets.com. You can email this man who's been involved in Academy Award winning projects. You can. I'm talking to them now, Maurice. He'll answer. He will write back to you with your questions you have about makeup or anything, disguising, Halloween, whatever it is you want to do. Plus, it's cinemasecrets.com. You can't get any more simple than that. And I can't thank you enough Maurice, I want you to get back and have some fun there, but and I appreciate the fact that you've taken you away. You know, you talked about retiring so that you could spend more time, and here I am taking you away from a family function.
You know what? This has been a very unusual pleasure to be able to do this with you and to know that maybe some of the things that I mentioned will help some of the people out there be able to know where they can get the different kind of special effect products or a good cosmetic that they need because they have some skin problems.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of the digital platform, you are reaching an audience that you ordinarily wouldn't, and I certainly appreciate the fact that you understand that and came on this program, and I hope we can have you on again, and we'll talk about some other stuff when you get some more time, and who knows what
else,
right? What?
Any time in the future that you'd like to do it again, we can talk about. We talked about most of the stuff I did 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You could talk about something I did after I retired and got pulled out of retirement.
Okay.
It was a television show with four of the sexiest girls I've ever worked with.
Ah, you're talking about the Golden Girls.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Big Mo and the Golden Girls.
Yep.
Definitely. Yes, we didn't get around to that. And I didn't even I want you to save all the little stories you might have about Ben Gazzara too, because I want to hear about Ben.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh boy.
I want to hear about Ben Gazzara.
You know what? You got to remind me.
Yeah.
The next time I come on,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you a story that I've only told this to a very few people. Because I didn't want Ben to find out.
Oh, that's a great tease. I love this. This is a great tease for your next appearance.
Oh,
I think this is great. You go have a great time at the graduation party, Maurice. And I will forever call you Maurice. I will never say Morris again. I apologize for not finding that out ahead of time. But
that's okay.
It made for good conversation, too. Thank you very much. And if I don't see you because I don't get out there in the meantime, I will we'll definitely talk again soon. Thank
all
you.
Right. And thank you for having me on your show.
Hey, thank you. The thanks are all go to you out there, and say hello to my favorite town out there, because I love it.
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you, Maurice.
Thank you, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
That was far more interesting than I remember. But, you know, I mean, it's got a different type of interest now. He's talking about, that's 11 years ago, he's talking about high def, right? And, wow, he said 8 years, and now, boy, you know, look at what we've seen, that avatar junk and all the stuff that goes on with digital that doesn't need, hands-on, it truly is hands-on, and still there are makeup people. Anyway, that was wonderful, Marisa. May you rest in peace. I don't know if he was ever on again. I will find out. I'll look for that show.
That's Gattolo over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's me. I'll look for that show. Was he ever on again? I don't know. Maurice Stein. Look him up. I think he's probably also on Wikipedia, and you could learn tons about what happened to him. By the way, he was 92 when he passed on. And I apologize to him, his family, and everyone else if I never had him on again. I can't remember these things. But that was fine and wonderful, and I hope you enjoyed it. Don't you even pause to second guess yourself if you got to write in. Email fcattolo@yahoo.com and look at the blog and find something. Write to me and we'll do that show. Meantime, I hope you all take care of yourselves. My name is Frank Gattolo. The mayor's name adorns the title of the show. Do I sound a lot different than I did then? I don't think so. Anyway. All right. You take care. Good night, Mrs. Earthsmile, wherever you may be located. We hope to be here next week. Meanwhile, Juice Talk and all the stuff that goes on there, the new material from Tom Savino and Frank Gattolo. It's not new material. It's old material, but it's... have a good time, everyone. Good time. Speaking of good times, good time for me to leave now, because I have nothing more to say.